Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few moments, we start our daily broadcast.
Who listens to radio?
Hi, I'm Dave Denton. I'm a radio guy, and even went by that name on the air in Missouri. This is Radio Guy Reflections. Hi, everyone. It's Dave Denton, Radio Guy Reflections, and thank you very much for joining us. Past editions of Radio Guy Reflections are available on many of these same podcast channels, and we've had guests like the people from the old pirate radio right in the English Channel that is now running a radio station in Thailand. One of our recent guests is Bart Herbison. Bart has worked in politics, but right now he is the director of the Nashville Songwriters Association. He's worked in radio as news, on-air personality, and honestly, one of the most talented people I ever worked with when I was in Tennessee. But today we're going to join with someone that I worked with for at least 10 years, maybe up to 15 years. He's a local talk show host in Logan, Utah, but we're going to talk about some national stuff later on in this particular podcast because we've got an election process going on. Jason Williams, I want to thank you for joining us today on Radio Guy Reflections.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here.
We've done some stuff on your talk show where I talked about professional wrestling, and we had a blast, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. We've done it all. We did cars. We did professional wrestling. We did some Beatles trivia one day.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I still don't know. I don't know anyone that can rattle off the Beatles trivia like you can, Dave.
Well, you know, I did oldies radio almost for 45 years, and I'm an oldie myself, but a goodie, right? An oldie, but you get old radio reference. But Jason, once again, I want to thank you for joining us. And before we get into the national stuff, I want to talk a little bit about you, my friend, because I know you didn't start off wanting to be on radio, but I think you've now been doing For the People, a local radio talk show in Logan, Utah, northern Utah, for about 14 years. So let's talk about your early years and how it might have led to you becoming a local radio personality. So the first question is, where were you born and raised?
I was actually born right here in Cache Valley. I was born in Logan, Utah. I grew up here other than some time away for college and lived in another state for a bit, ended up back here. And like all good things in life, finding myself in radio was literally an accident. I'd written about politics. I'd always been political junkie is the word, but it's the easiest way to understand it is there are people out there, believe it or not, that follow politics the way most people follow sports. Mm-hmm. And over the years, your head gets full of the same amount of useless trivia and backstory. And I had sort of in the early 2000s when blogging really took off, I'd taken an interest in that. And I started writing a little bit about state politics here in Utah, mainly, and regional politics. And by sheer timing, got lucky a few times enough that I could monetize that enough to at least make it worth my time. A local story even picked up by CNN once that a friend and I had written. And that was a lot of fun. And then 2008, a good friend of mine, Tom Grover, had been listening to he and Ryan Yonk host KVNU's For the People for a couple of years at that point. Tom calls me up. I'd been a guest on the show here and there, but he calls me up one day and he said, I'm going to law school. Ryan's going to grad school. We found one person. We need two people to keep this show going. Would you be willing to fill in for a few months in the afternoon? Because I told him I run a business, I had a day job. And he said, could you fill in, a few days a week for a couple of months while they find a permanent co-host? And I said, sure, that would be great. And that was August 2008.
And you're there every day. Yeah.
Yeah. 14 years later, the show's evolved a lot. It's gone from, different iterations of a three-person left, right, and center kind of panel style to now these days kind of more of me hosting the show solo as a kind of more of a news host, trying to facilitate conversations and get guests interacting and all of that. And, you know, there's a joke that it's a little bit like a bug. You get it and then you can't let go of it. And, but one of the, you know, Dave, honestly, one of the things that has always struck me about me being in talk radio is that I didn't come at this as a huge talk radio fan.
Right.
I was a radio fan. I love music radio. And when, you know, podcasting first came on scene, 2010, 11, 12-ish, whenever that was, I was an early adopter. But I'd always kind of thought that when it comes to news talk radio, I'd always kind of thought there was something a little bit too one-sided about it. Mm-hmm. And even maybe a little bad for our politics. But I got into this, I realized that was just, that was an impression that I realized that when it comes to local talk radio, you can do something completely unique and different with it than the big national syndicated guys.
Right.
And the first thing I really realized is that talk radio listeners are extremely savvy. Right. They know their community. Mm-hmm. They pay attention. They are plugged in. And as soon as I connected those dots, I love this. I love the ability to just, you know, bring a guest on the show. You know, we do this with candidates. We bring candidates on the show, and I try very hard not to put my thumb on any scale, and to make it not apparent in any way whether I personally like the candidate or not. Sometimes it's still evident. There are a few that it's hard, but I bring them on and I talk to them and I have a friendly conversation with them. And then I let the listeners sort of drive things from there.
Right.
And it really is astounding how much attention people actually pay to what's going on in their communities and in their, maybe from the state level at times, but mostly in their local communities. People really do pay attention.
And I think when you talked earlier about how some of the talk radio was a little bit more divisive. And
sure,
one of our very, I think it was our third podcast on Radio Guy Reflections. You joined us with Tom and Ryan that you talked about. And we talked, it was right after the death of Rush Limbaugh. And still to this day, I think that was one of the best podcasts we ever put out because we had Tom more of a libertarian, Ryan kind of more of a libertarian. I am a conservative. And then you are more liberal in your views, but we talked about how Rush Limbaugh was like the father of talk radio, not about his politics, but how it evolved from Rush. And then I always noticed, and I'm going to give you a compliment here, okay? So let your head get bigger and bigger as I do this. Are you ready? You, and like I said, I worked with you. I would talk with you in the hallways. I was even on your show a couple of times for more entertainment type things. But we talked, and I always noticed when I would listen that you didn't let your personal feelings very often get involved with the interview. You would ask a pertinent question, whether you liked that candidate or you didn't like that candidate. And I think that's your strength, that overall it's very hard to figure out on the air your political views because you're a pro at doing that. And I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate that compliment because if I have worked at one thing, it's that to make sure that I don't. And again, you know, to Rush Limbaugh, I think the one thing people really miss about him, what made him great, wasn't really so much what he said specifically on air. It was how he said it.
Exactly.
And then even more importantly, Rush invented a business model.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a business model that saved talk radio mm-hmm. at a time that it was really struggling. And it's struggling again now, I think, without him. They're trying to find their footing again overall. You know, what is talk radio now without Rush? And they will. There will always be a market for it, despite the, you know, what you hear from some of the tech bro crowd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think talk radio is ever going away. But it actually comes from a personal story, two personal stories. a co-host of mine, a very conservative guy with some libertarian flair. He and his wife, who happened to be a very, very progressive Democrat, they got an opportunity through her blog to travel to Washington, D.C. and meet President Obama, who had just been elected. He'd just been sworn in when this happened. And I remember talking with my co-host. His name was John. And John, I knew, did not like Obama. He didn't like anything he stood for, any policy he suggested on the campaign trail. And they went out there, they came back, and I were in the studio, and I asked him how it went. And he said, you know, I realize I disagree with everything this person stands for and everything his administration is going to try and do. But he said, I realize, and I'm reminded, sitting there meeting this person, meeting this new president, meeting his staff, that these are good people wanting to do good things, right, and they just have a different idea of how to go about it than I do.
That's awesome.
And that's... that stuck with me over the years so much. And then a personal story. She's I have permission to tell this story. I've asked, but she's currently the lieutenant governor of Utah. But years and years ago, there was a man running for Congress, and I thought he was awful. And he's proven, I've been proven to be right here in Congress. But his campaign staff was, Twitter was new. She was all over Twitter as part of his staff, and she and I butted heads so many times online, and we called each other some horrible things, and we argued and argued and argued. And then she got elected as a state senator, and that same year I went to the Senate with a proposed idea from friends of mine at the Sunlight Foundation on a transparency bill. And the Senate president, who I kind of knew, said, I want you to work with this new state senator, Senator Deidre Henderson. And I thought, oh, no, she knows me. I know her. And she, we're talking, and she, my Twitter account comes up, and she said, oh, you're that, Jason? And I thought, oh, this is the end of it. Anyway, over the years, since 2010, when this happened, she and I became friends, and we worked together on several different transparency things at the state legislative level. And I'll be honest with you, I actually switched my voter registration to vote for her in a primary.
Oh, wow.
Her running mate, the governor, was okay, I guess, but that's my personal story that goes along with what my co-host said that one time, that, you know, there are these people. It's a good reminder that, that we have different ideas of how to approach problems and solve problems at a local level, at a state level, at a federal level. But I think you have to remember that people you disagree with are not evil. Mm-hmm. They can be. You know, there are evil people out there, sure.
On both sides of the aisle.
On both sides.
Exactly.
On both sides, yeah. Political party does not insulate, anyone from being a bad person. It does happen. But at the same time, the majority of people that I've met in our state legislature, who are some of the most conservative people on the planet,
right?
They are good people.
Yeah.
And they just have a different idea of how to go about things or solve problems than maybe I do.
Right.
But that to me has been a real help when I bring guests into the studio. Another fun story that I like to tell is Mitt Romney. I remember the 2012 presidential campaign, and I thought at the time naively that was as ugly as our politics would get in this country.
Wrong.
I was wrong. I was very wrong. But I had my first chance to interview and meet Mitt Romney in person a few years ago when he ran for Senate here in Utah the first time. And he and I ended up having an hour-long conversation about the 2012 presidential campaign and about politics and about Trump and about everything that was going on. And I found him to be one of the most sincere and well-intended people that I probably ever had a chance to interview.
Wow.
And yet, I went back and looked at my reaction to what was going on in the campaigns, things I'd posted and written online, things I'd said on the show about the 2012 campaigns, and it was hard to square what I said and what I thought about that person and that candidate at that time with the person I just met and had this conversation with. So it's good to remember these things, that, you know, you we demonize very quickly, and we like to assume if someone disagrees with us that they are a bad person or an evil person or they have nefarious intent. And that's in 14 years of talk radio, spending most of my time speaking with conservative Republican elected officials or candidates or county officials, I have met very, very few bad people.
Right. And I think that's important for all of us to hear and all of us to learn, because everything on social media gets so contentious. But we, think basically, and like you said, there's bad people on both sides of the aisle. And I like to say it's the extreme of any political movement or any movement at all. The extreme on the left, the extreme on the right, that give whatever that movement is a bad name. There's just plenty of the extremist that seems to take over the mainstream. And no, it's just the extremist. So I often, when I read all this stuff, I have to take it in the back of my head that most of the people, and I'll have a cousin's wife who I won't name, but I will say that one time we were having a discussion of something, and she said, "I'm a knee-jerk liberal." And I said, "Well, I'm a conservative, but you know what? I love you anyway because you care." And then she said the same thing about me, caring about what we did. And we just had different ways of going about it. It wasn't that one side was completely right and the other side was completely wrong. I just wish we could meet more in the middle and say, you know, that side has a pretty decent idea. Let's see if we can tweak it a little bit to where everyone, and I don't see that happening in this age of social media, because people, they like to argue the extremes. And that's just my opinion.
You know, an interesting thing that happened with my radio show is over the years, we had a longtime contributor, a weekly contributor even. His name was Paul Miro.
Oh, I remember
that. He was the president. President of a very, very conservative think tank in Utah that still exists. He's now moved on to other things and lives in Arizona, but he and I still friends to this day. Haven't talked to him for quite a while. I should give him a call, but we found that we had actually a lot of things we agreed on. Transparency issues when it comes to government, community issues when it comes to how cities approach their constituents or their residents, you know, and talk to them. We had a lot, we had more, far more in common than the two or three big national issues we extremely disagreed on. But one of the things I appreciated about him that I think matters is he was sincere and consistent in his beliefs. And you have to appreciate that about a person, I think. One of his best qualities, and this is something, a compliment for you, Dave, as well. I know you don't dabble in politics often, but when you do, you're a curious person. And you never seem to approach things. And this is what I admired about Paul as well. He never approached things. He was confident. He would say, "This is what I believe. And I believe that I've come to those conclusions through thought and research and getting to know the issue." But when challenged, if he was presented new, I watched Paul change his mind on immigration reform in a week after being presented some information about the kids of immigrants, the first generation of that family born here once they immigrated to the United States, and crime data. And I watched him absorb that information and turn around and take that entire think tank in a different direction. It caused so much drama in the state legislature because you had this conservative think tank suddenly saying, wait, we should be compassionate.
I think that's the education end in politics. I wish more people would say, you know, present the facts to me and then let me make that decision. But so many people approach it as, "I'm conservative or I'm liberal. I'm conservative or I'm liberal." And to me, I have voted, as I say, I'm fairly conservative, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. Because if they represent what I believe, or if I think that the biggest issue of the time, I'm going to say, I'm going to vote for you. A quick story, I met a congressman one time, and I won't say where or who, but it's not in the state of Utah. But I met a congressman that had done what I thought was almost treasonous in a situation that occurred back in the 70s. And he was out campaigning, sure. Came to the radio station, and he came to shake my hand, and I shook his hand and told him that, you know, I really appreciated meeting him. I mean, he's a congressman. I mean, you got to respect the office. And then he asked sure. if I would vote for him. And I said, I have a problem. And I told him what my problem was. And I said, that doesn't mean you were completely wrong. I just didn't like the way you handled it. And he looked at me and he said, well, I appreciate that. And we left it at that. We shook hands and walked off. And I didn't vote for him because, like I said, I thought his thing that he did was almost treasonous. And I left it at that, but we left on good terms. But I'd like to kind of get our thought of conversation going back into how talk radio is involved in politics so much over the last 25 years, especially talk radio and social media. That's where politics is really taking place right now. And what do you sure. think about that?
I think, you know, it's complicated because I still believe some of the things that I came in to talk radio believing about its potential dangers. And uh-huh. and I think often about some relatives I have that I would say basically checked in with Rush Limbaugh every day on what they should believe. Uh-huh. And that was as far as they thought things through. And I think that type of thing is dangerous. Uh-huh. You see it on social media now, even dialed up to 11. Everyone will have their favorite person or party or group, and whatever that group says, that's what they now think. And that's human nature. You know, mm-hmm. it's always going to be a part of it. But I think, especially on the local level, I'm not saying I'm the best at it or that we do the best job at it at the radio group in general at all times, but I think we do a pretty decent job of supplying a platform mm-hmm. for local candidates, local officials, and we always try to air both sides of the story. You know, there are times when there is only one side to the story and the other side probably shouldn't even get airtime. But right. for the most part, most issues, there are two sides to the story, and we try to give both on the show equal time. And then let listeners decide. And again, back to what I was saying about realizing that listeners are savvy and they're selective. I think there's a difference between how we approach national politics and political bandwagons, where we maybe kind of get lazy and just check in with someone we've decided to trust for what we should believe, mm-hmm. and local issues where we realize at the local level, it's very important. It might just be a stop sign that everyone's debating.
Right, exactly.
It's going to impact your daily drive every day. Mm-hmm. And I think on those local issues, people really engage and plug in and think carefully about how they're approaching things for the most part. And I think that's where talk radio has its real value. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes, I think, an unfortunate trend in talk radio. It has been for too many stations to move away from that. There are a lot of stations where you don't hear much local content. It's just, right. you know, it's just a rehashing the same syndicated shows at different times all day long. Mm-hmm. And that's what I appreciate about what the station I work for has done, is they've kept that local content focused. And it's not been easy for them.
No.
It would be cheaper for them to replace the 2 hours a day I fill. It would be cheaper and easier for them to replace that. And believe me, they would have had to deal with less drama over the years too, when they have stepped in it here or there, or angered this person or that person. But it would be cheaper and easier for them to find another syndicated show to run in that spot. And yeah. and they've chosen not to. And that's, I think, where the power of talk radio is, because it's a place to discuss things. And there's something different to me. And my experience, there's something different about posting an anonymous thing on the comment section of a web page or a tweet or even a Facebook comment where your name's on it, but only your friends are going to see it. Mm-hmm. And actually calling in to a public forum that thousands of people are going to be listening to at any given time and expressing your opinion. Mm-hmm. It forces you to think, okay, how am I going to say this? Why do I believe this? And so I think there's the value in talk radio, if it's used as a forum for discussion and engagement with people to present. Well, here's an example, I guess, to express what I'm saying is we used to do candidate debates all the time. Mm-hmm. and they were never good. What are you going to learn from a candidate with 2-minute responses? They're right. Basically just reading their websites and campaign documents to you on the radio. And then you're hoping for some drama because the assumption was that that's what people want to hear. And I did an experiment several years ago where I started doing candidate spotlights instead, bring the candidates on one by one, literally ask them questions like, why are you running? What is your first goal? What would you like to do in the first few months if elected? And then let listeners call and ask questions or just listen sometimes. And what we found is that listeners appreciated that more. Yeah. They got to know the candidates more. And the candidates appreciated it because they got to talk about things a little deeper than a 2-minute debate response. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, one of the unique things about talk radio or about any recorded audio medium even as well fits into this. You have that opportunity to get a little deeper into things than, the CNN sound bites right. that everyone unfortunately turns to for their needs.
Well, when you talk about CNN, and I'm going to praise them, but I'm also going to talk a little bit bad about CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, because they let their, quote, news people express their political values during a news segment, not a news talk segment,
sure.
during a news segment. And what little news I've done, I was a news director in Tennessee for almost 2 years. I did six and a half years of doing news in Missouri. I've recorded some newscast when I was at the Cache Valley Media Group, supplied some news stories. And I always thought all I needed to do was present the facts as they occurred and not let my personal feelings get involved with what was going on. I'll give you just a short example. A little city I was at a city council meeting in Montgomery City, Missouri, there was a controversy about what to do with a landfill. And the man that was threatening a lawsuit was actually wanting to buy the land so he could develop it. Convoluted mess. But the city was fighting back, almost a little dirty at the time. And I reported what this guy said, and I reported what the mayor said. That's all I did. The mayor and the man that wanted to develop that land. And the mayor jumped me in a store and just lambasted me about making the city look bad. And I looked at him and I said, no, you made the city look bad. What you said. All I was doing is reporting
right.
what you, the mayor, said. And he kind of looked at me funny, and then he just huffed and went off in a tirade. I could have taken it because I personally felt the man that was wanting to develop the property and put houses and get it, taking care of the landfill to where it wouldn't be a possibility of a problem. I found out that he had done that in California at a couple other cities, and that's how he made his money. I could have said that, but that would have been biased against the situation and against him. I didn't know what his personal values were when the news story was going. I just knew we had to have a place to put our garbage in. But sure. I consciously just reported the facts and try to leave my personal opinions out there. I wish they would separate the newscast when they do their news roundup, just separate that and let it, when the pundits are talking, let them do their thing. But they really allow the writers of their news stories and the reporters of the news stories to put their personal opinions. And I think that's
sure.
pretty cheap, to be honest with you.
It is. And that's, when I say certain types of media are dangerous. That's exactly what I mean. I think we'd be a lot better off if we understood that cable news is actually cable entertainment.
Right.
That, you know, Rush Limbaugh was entertainment. He was not a news person.
And that's exactly right. He was doing things that Saturday Night Live did when Gerald Ford was president, and he was getting really bad press for making fun of the, you know, like President Clinton. But look how much fun that Saturday Night Live had against Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon and all the, you know, that, and that's what he was doing. And the liberal side was having trouble finding someone to combat him on radio with the entertainment, not the content, but the entertainment value that Rush Limbaugh had.
Sure. It was big business. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of money to be made, and he was a genius in how he approached that. Mm-hmm. And like I say, he built a business model that to this day has been copied by everyone. Mm-hmm. And he deserves all the credit for that. And when I say that these shows are entertainment, I don't mean that in a disparaging way. Well, I do a little bit with cable news, because I think that cable news in general has been very irresponsible.
Ooh, yeah, they are.
How they've done things over the years and today even. But Limbaugh, he never tried to present himself as a news. He never said, you'll never find a single show where he said, get your news from me.
Right.
And we've tried to be careful about that on my show as well. For example, it seems like a little thing, but it's a big thing. The news is separate from what I say. When I interview a candidate, I try to be very careful. When I interview a local elected official, I try to be very fair. And if I'm going to do a segment where I'm expressing my opinion, I try to say that right up front. This is my take. Mm-hmm. Like right now, I'm very opposed to a constitutional amendment that's on the ballot here in my local area, because it may be a good idea. This is the third time the legislature has asked us to amend the Constitution to give them more power, and I think we should say no after two times saying yes.
Yeah, right. I know what you're talking about.
I've been advocating that on air, and very clear that I'm advocating that. But when we go to the news, it's a different person, a different voice, and it's very separate from the time that I'm talking. And I think that kind of thing really matters. And I really feel like our politics right now wouldn't be so ugly and wouldn't be so full of conspiracy theories and garbage that dominate it today if we had all ourselves as news consumers. Mm-hmm. This is my hill that I will die on. There's a lot of criticism for cable news, for Rush Limbaugh, for social media, for all of these things, and the criticism's fair. But what's missing from it all is the responsibility of the news consumer. We have a responsibility to recognize when we're consuming news and when we're consuming opinion or entertainment. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten really bad at distinguishing between the two as news consumers.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that needs to be a part of the conversation too, that you can't just point to someone like Limbaugh and say, he ruined everything. He didn't. He tapped a market, and that was smart of him.
Right.
And the problem is that people don't distinguish between the two, news and entertainment. I honestly think it's one of the biggest contributors to the politics we see today. And then the parties have looked at that and said, this is an opportunity for us. Mm-hmm. And both major parties have run with that and said, we're going to exploit this, that people do not distinguish between news and entertainment anymore. So if we're getting the most likes and shares, we're succeeding. Mm-hmm. That's so different from the politics of our parents when, you know, the likes and shares weren't really driving things. It mattered whether someone was telling the truth or not.
Right.
That drove things.
Reflections. It's the world of professional wrestling. Hi, I'm Dave Dutton. I'm one of those lifelong fans. Christopher Evans joins me and Zane Peterson as we talk about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling from a little bit different perspective than a lot of the podcasts out there.
The following contest is scheduled for one fall.
We know what we like, and sometimes we talk about things we don't like.
You stupid idiots!
You might even find a chance to laugh at some of the things we do.
Who are you calling Rudy Tootie Booty?
It's Turnbuckle Trash. It's available on many of these same podcast channels. Join us. Turnbuckle Trash are also on Facebook and turnbuckletrash.net. This is Radio Guy Reflections.
Too many people in this business who think that they're, I guess it's a podcast, their stuff doesn't stink. You know, it's just like, hey, look, we're all just enjoying the game. We're all just having a good time. Sports are supposed to be fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Let's go have a good time and really paint a great picture for the fans out there.
I wanted to be me. I didn't want to put on a show. I wanted to, obviously, a show, but I didn't want to be fake on the air. What you get is what you get.
You know, that would be a fascinating career. I want to witness history in a way and see it and tell the compelling stories of it.
When did you find out he is autistic?
When you get that diagnosis, it's not necessarily a shock to you, but it's validating how you've been feeling.
I can't imagine what the future of talk radio could have been or would have been had Rush not come along when he did.
This is Radio Guy Reflections. Well, you know, you're bringing up a point that I wanted to kind of talk to you about also, because there's a lot of controversy about voting processes, especially right now.
Sure.
As we're getting ready to go into, the real heat of the midterm elections in the next week. And this is what I wanted to talk to you about. There are several states, including the state of Utah, that now use mail-in ballots. And I think there's 18 states that have partial mail-in ballots, and then a few will have special elections on mail-in ballots. You, as a news commentator, but also as a political junkie, I wanted to get your, and this is, I want your opinion about the mail-in ballots and the security of, are they secure, or are we getting into something that we shouldn't get into? Your opinion.
I think Utah sort of stands as an example of how mail-in balloting can be done securely and safely. The state of Utah has actually been doing it for about 12 years, and they have ironed out the kinks, and they have, I mean, it runs very, very well in Utah, and it's proven to be a almost entirely fraud-free system.
Right.
And what little fraud there is always gets caught. And they've shown it can be done. But I think the problem is in 2020, you had these states who had just kind of kicked this can down the road. They knew that there was demand for this type of thing. They knew that it improved turnout. But they also knew it was very expensive and it was difficult, and they just didn't. And then 2020 comes along and they all decide, we've got to do this now. And they were probably right, but at the same time, they didn't unintentionally created the situation where they were rushing into it. And there were legitimate questions. Are you doing it the right way? Are you being careful about it? Are you? And then, unfortunately, you also had the politics at the time that were just kind of ripe for some conspiracy theories and some suspicions that maybe had a little bit of evidence to drive them along. And it turned into this juggernaut that we're dealing with today on whether elections were stolen or not, and undermining faith in the process. I think, you know, like I say, Utah has shown that it can be done. It can be done well, and that it should be done. But unfortunately, you have all these other states that just weren't prepared and jumped into it quickly and created, you know, a situation where people, have these questions, and sometimes the states couldn't answer because they weren't sure themselves yet.
Well, you know, go ahead.
Legitimate questions existed about how states were going about this because it was so rushed.
I'm going to give my personal opinion here on an issue about voter identification. I can't see why there's such a backlash against that. I don't want to get into the racial aspects of it, but why people are so opposed to it. Some people, when, you know, you've got to show an ID to cash a check, you got to show an ID when you go into the hospital, you got to show, and these are all important things, but voting to me is one of the most important things we can do. And in the state of Utah, you had to show your ID before the mail-in ballot. I just don't see why people are so opposed to this voter ID in several of the states, including Georgia, where, you know, they have the racist aspect there. And I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to discuss racism, but I don't understand why it isn't, why is race into this? I guess that's what I don't understand. It just doesn't make sense why race is brought into this.
I think there's a legitimate concern that we should just be careful anytime we're creating barriers that might keep a person interested in voting from voting. But on the flip side, I think as you look at a lot of the data around voter ID, it hasn't proven to be the gigantic hurdle that many thought it would be to voting. I've always thought about it sort of this way. One, I'm sympathetic to those who oppose it because I don't really see that it solved an existing problem. I don't think there was, I don't think there was a big problem to solve. I think it was more of almost a political thing when it really started to catch on. On the flip side of that, I also think that states can have and maybe still should in more ways make it really easy to get voter ID documents and provide that identification. Mm-hmm. And I think if states continue to make that as easy as possible to do, then it doesn't have to be a barrier to people voting. And again, you know, with that previous disclaimer that I do sometimes wonder if it wasn't just a political bandwagon more than solving an actual problem. It's one of those issues I kind of wish we would sort of just find a way to facilitate it and move on and deal with some of the larger problems that are sort of pressing on us right now. Because to be honest with you, I'm more concerned when I see there was a story out of Texas this week that the state legislature decided not to fund a single drop box in for mail-in ballots in a community of something like 16,000 people. Mm-hmm. They were going to have to drive 20 minutes to drop their ballots off if they wanted to vote early. I'm more concerned about things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree. That, unreal, huh?
But to
get that situation taken care of and get back to the running of the country, I think if they could just get rid of that and say, okay, we're going to do it this way and this is the way it's going to be, but no, somebody has to complain on one side of the aisle or the other. That's one of my major complaints, is that everybody, the extreme, once again, thinks that they are the only one that has the solution to the issues. And I've said it once, I've said it on Facebook, and I've said it to you. No one has all the answers. You know, they just don't. And I just wish they'd get back to it, to running the country.
The reason that I think there is so little about that happening these days and why these issues just kind of, because if you think about it, a lot of these issues have just hung around being political, polarizing talking points for a generation sometimes. Mm-hmm. And nothing is ever done. The two parties fight about it. They campaign against this or that. And then it just remains an issue. Like immigration reform is a good example. And it's one of the things, and you know, Dave, you and I have talked about this personally. I don't agree with Senator Mike Lee on anything, but one thing, one thing that he has said, and I criticize him a bit for this because I think at times he's actually contributed to the problem that he's correctly identifying,
right,
inadvertently or not. That's a debate for another day. But Senator Mike Lee has said repeatedly that one of the biggest problems in this country right now is that Congress has stopped doing its job. They don't solve problems. And that I think whether you're talking, you know, election issues, whether you're talking immigration reform, whether you're talking tax policy, whether you're, it's become a perpetual political campaign.
Right.
And the two parties, the two major parties have no reason to end this. It's great fundraising for them. The longer these issues stay unsolved, the more money they can fundraise off of them, the more they can try to build the parties and get people out voting. And that's all great stuff. But there's no incentive to actually solve these problems and then have them taken off the table, because what are we going to fundraise off of? If we reform the immigration system, how are we going to fundraise next cycle?
Controversy sells, and that means money.
That's right.
And money is the root of all evil. And, you know, I don't have very deep roots, but follow the money in anything, and you'll get a really good view of how things are run now in this country. And speaking of money, we talked about this before we started this mail-in campaign that's going on. And, you know, we do our mail ballots in the state of Utah, and I actually turned mine in the day after you could turn in your ballot. So I'm hearing all these political ads, seeing these political ads for various candidates and various issues going up too. But have you seen a shift of how advertising dollars are going into politics? And if so, how are you seeing that?
Oh, definitely. In fact, one of the most interesting, research projects ongoing in the political science world is trying to answer a simple question, which is, does any of this make a difference? And I was reading just recently, so this United States Senate race between independent Evan McMullen and Republican Mike Lee, one of the most expensive races in history in Utah.
Right.
And it's interesting to watch, because the two candidates in the ads they actually put their names on that are coming from their campaigns, they're going about it in kind of more traditional way. They're debating ideas. They're not really disparaging each other too much. But then you have these PACs that are coming in, not affiliated with the campaigns, and their ads are nasty and they're mean and there's no dignity to them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is one aspect of it that is really concerning to see. But really, there's a big question about, you know, does any of this, all of this money that's going around that could be feeding poor people or housing homeless people, does it make a difference? Does it influence things at all more than a point or two or half a point? And
right,
we don't know. But
yeah,
the research is being done. But one of the shifts that I've seen, just kind of paying attention to this over the years myself, is the parties trying to figure out the influence of things like Facebook advertising and Instagram and Twitter ads and things like that versus traditional television and radio ad packages. And to be honest with you, I don't think anyone knows right now what's working. On the local level, you can still say a lot of things. You know, I live in an area where campaign signs on yards actually do still have an influence.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's really hard to say that something like Facebook ads are playing a part. I've never talked to a person who said, you know, in this local race for a county council seat, I saw a Facebook ad and thought about it. I don't hear that ever. What I hear is I talked to a neighbor, or I saw a campaign sign, or I went to a local event at a school. And so, yeah, I think right now there seems to be this attitude that you just throw money at these things, and maybe you only influence the race by a point, but that's all it takes sometimes. And so we're just going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at this. And the problem is, the end result, to answer the question definitively, in my opinion, the end result is, unfortunately, all of this money means your local races get nationalized.
Yeah.
So you have people, municipal races in the off years, as they call them, where, you know, you have two candidates running for mayor of a small city, and they're having to campaign on their stance on abortion or same-sex marriage, or things they are never going to get to vote on,
right?
Because it's never going to be a municipal decision. And yet that's how they're having to campaign, because all this money in politics has trained us to think about every election cycle on a national stage. And unfortunately, I think what it means in the end is you're going to have legislatures, instead of doing the business of the state. We see it here in Utah, more and more bills that are sort of message bills to stake out political ground on hot button political issues that aren't even really part of the state. And that, I think, is the end result of all this money in politics, is that it becomes, I've already used the phrase, but I'll say it again, a perpetual campaign. It's just everyone is always campaigning, and the money is driving it all.
And then, you know, I'm going to complain about the broadcast industry as a whole, okay? Radio and TV,
sure.
This is something that has driven me nuts over the past 20 years. And I'll say I was watching a local Fox affiliate, Fox 13, watch their news in the morning, and here they go to a break. It's an Evan McMullen ad. Then the next break, the next ad will be for Mike Lee. And then a political PAC ad will come on right after that. And it, to me, they're just saying, okay, just bring me the money. We'll just place it where we can. And I've noticed that in radio, that they'll put car dealers, competing car dealers back to back. And that doesn't make any sense. All it takes is just a little common sense to say, you know, you're going to buy this amount of ads. We're going to place you where we can place you, but not next to your competition. So your advertising dollar is more effective. It drives me crazy, both radio and TV.
It becomes white noise.
Yeah.
It has zero influence, because no one really hears any of it, because it's just competing noise. And that really raises the question of, you know, like, is this money doing anything?
Mm-hmm.
Even for the people spending it, are they achieving their goals? I don't think so. I think they're, you know, at very least, when it comes to political ads, at very least, they're reminding everyone to an obnoxious extent that there's an election happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know if that influences people who wouldn't otherwise go out and vote to go out and vote. I mean, there's so little evidence to show that any of this has any significant impact, and yet it's a billion-dollar industry. And you know who's getting rich? The consultants who are selling them.
That, you know what I think about word, consultants? I'm not a big fan of that word, consultants, and you know why. So.
Oh, sure. It's, you know, it's something that you see it, you know, harm the business world. You see it harm the media world. It's in the political world, too. You have these consultants who say, oh, you have to be doing this. And the candidates or campaigns or parties or, you know, whoever it is, they don't know enough to say no. And so they, okay, here's a check.
Yeah.
And the evidence is so little to suggest that there's any merit to any of it.
And don't you find that, you know, we're talking in broadcasting and possibly in politics, that it's copycat? That, you know, it's all copycat. You need to do this. You need to have more of a presence on Twitter, our Instagram, our Facebook. And then in radio, you hear the same thing. You got to take care of your audience on Facebook and Twitter. And then with your format, that they'll say, you got to sound like this station in Los Angeles. And I'm going, I'm not in Los Angeles. I'm in Logan, Utah. Now, I see the value in social media if it's done right. Now, I can't complain about that. But to copycat everything, it drives me crazy.
You know, social media is a great promotional tool. But what we've seen is that the consultants in, you know, the 2010s era, who were telling everyone, you know, oh, that's how you're going to drive your content and engage your listeners, we're seeing that they maybe didn't really know what they were talking about. People dabbled with it quite a bit for a few years, and then they settled back into the status quo, which is, you know, advertising is a great example, because there are some staples to advertising that have never, ever changed.
Right.
One of them being, you know, you aren't advertising to get someone to take an act or take an action the minute they hear your ad. Right. You're advertising so that when their pipes do break, they remember your jingle and
exactly.
think to call you. The same thing applies in politics and media and everything. It's all about, you know, flooding the zone is the phrase that's used. But the problem is we're all subjected to that.
And we are wearing our flood pants right now because, man, we got a lot of flooding.
That's right. And I wouldn't be surprised when it comes to politics. I wouldn't be surprised if you see evidence from this research in the political science world that starts mm-hmm. to show that the amount of money in politics is actually causing people to sort of tune out.
Uh-huh.
And maybe their mail-in ballot sits on their kitchen table until it's too late, and then they just shred it. It wouldn't surprise me to see that that's, you know, one of the unintended consequences of all this money and all this advertising and politics is that people just don't have time. They don't want to be inundated with it. They've got lives. They've got things to do. I have relatives who have told me they are not voting for a candidate because they are sick of hearing their TV ads.
I'm tired of that TV ad. Yeah, I believe it.
That's right. I think it might be a more common thing than the candidates realize.
Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a fascinating conversation about talk radio and then also talking about the political issues of today. I think it's been absolutely fascinating. And I just encourage people to make sure they cast their ballot, whichever way it
sure.
is. I firmly believe that you've got to let your very own beliefs known. If you don't complain. I mean, I'm one of those.
That's right.
But I also say get yourself educated a little bit and vote your conscience. I'm not telling you to vote like a conservative. I'm not telling you to vote like a liberal. I'm voting your conscience, what you believe, whoever you're going to vote for represents your views the most, because there are some views on the Democratic side that I agree with, some views on the Republican side I agree with, and I will find out who represents my thought processes the most. And that's the way I hope that more and more people will do, and we can get the political parties discussing the issues instead of throwing mud or buying votes. And I think that goes on a lot too.
Absolutely.
The
only thing I would add to that is, you know, pay attention to those local races.
Exactly.
We have so much energy every 4 years for the presidential race, and I get it. Most powerful person in the world can start a war. Very important job, right?
Right.
But your local candidates can decide things that more immediately impact your life. Like I say, in municipal races, we see turnout that is, a tenth of a presidential election year. And yet those municipal races, they can put a stop sign up that ruins your daily commute forever.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Those are the kinds of decisions that really matter.
And locally, you know, we're talking about two issues that are on the ballot right now in Cache Valley. One of them is for open space, where they're trying to purchase land for more open space. And I'm not going to say which side of the issue I'm on, but boy, is that a local issue that is very, very important for all of us. And then the other one is for a tax increase called the Wrapped Tax, which would go to entertainment. And those are two very important issues that are being decided in our area. And if we didn't have things like talk radio, you wouldn't know much about them.
Well, those are two great examples of local decisions that don't get as much attention as even, you know, the United States Senate race or something like that. But the impact is far greater. The bonding question on the ballot here locally, that's only an additional $2 a month for the average person in Cache Valley.
Mm-hmm.
But the larger question is, you know, how that money is going to be used. Do we want to plan to put open space aside as we see development happening like crazy?
Mm-hmm.
That's a far more important issue than an issue that affects you more. In the future of the place you live,
mm-hmm.
than anything whoever wins the Senate race is ever going to vote on.
It's those local issues that really should drive us.
And unfortunately, we like I say, I still go back to blaming the the infotainment industry, like cable news, right. they've trained us to only care about the presidential election every 2-4 years and to check out at other times. It's unfortunate.
Well, I think talk shows like yours are very important for those local issues. And I encourage people to get out there and find a talk show that not necessarily just talk about the national issues, but gets it down to your community. And I know there are some out there like that because it's needed. And I think that's one way that radio is going to survive over the years is turning it back to more local content that would make it very, very interesting for us to listen to a local talk show to see what's going on and how it's going to affect our daily lives. And Jason, I want to give you an opportunity to tell people how to listen to your talk show called For the People.
And let me just throw this in as well. If you live in an area, if you're listening now in an area that doesn't have a local show, reach out to your local radio station, petition
sure.
them. If they see an interest, they will find a way to create it. But we're online. We have a podcast you can subscribe to. We use the Podcastics service. So you can just search Podcastics and KVNU's For the People. Subscribe there through whatever podcasting app you choose. And on the original terrestrial terrain, we are on 610 AM and 102.1 FM. This is one of my favorite things. On a good when the weather is just right, we have a listener from Rock Springs, a long ways away from Cache Valley, that's a regular caller. I love thinking that there's at least the opportunity that people from that far away might be listening. But engage with your local media. I think the most important thing is that these are people, you know, like me, that are in your community, live with you, they're your neighbors, and it's really where the important things are happening. And unfortunately, like I say, the infotainment industry gets more of our attention, and it shouldn't. So, Dave, I really appreciate you putting a spotlight on this, and I love what you do with your podcast as well, because one of my favorite thing about you, Dave, you are a curious person that has never, ever stopped exploring. I think that's a good life lesson for us all.
Well, thank you. I know that you listen in to my other podcast called Turnbuckle Trash because you've made comments about it. And that one's about professional wrestling and the strange world that is going on. And then I know you listen to some of the Radio Guy Reflections. And, you know, I'm trying to get more people involved, but trying to get guests sometimes just, woo, man, it'll drive you nuts. So I appreciate you coming on. And I had this idea about 2 weeks ago. Because of the political process, and I was seeing all these, you know, the early voting, the mail-in voting, and getting all this attention, but I wanted to find out how it was going to affect local races and advertising values, advertising dollars on local radio, and I think we've had a really good conversation on that end. And once again, I applaud you for the way you approach the For the People program, because you do approach it a little bit different, even though your political views are one way. I think you keep it in the middle as well as anybody has ever heard, and I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, because it's definitely a goal, and it's nice to hear that from you that you feel we're succeeding at that. I think it's an important thing for us to do, and it's fun to hear a good fight on the radio, to hear some people arguing or yelling at each other. I get it. It's fun. But do you really learn anything? Do you walk away from that, you know, a little more informed about a candidate or an issue? Probably not.
Well, I say if you want to hear a good fight, you watch professional wrestling, right?
That's right. That's right. That's what it's for, right?
And get more oozy is what's going on right now in the WWE. I don't know if you know about that, but. Yeah, that's a funny segment, and I don't want to go into professional wrestling here, but yeah, if you're looking for something to watch for a fight, I mean, pro wrestling is entertainment beyond anything that involves violence. You know, it's good stuff. You know,
And we should put a full-throated plug in here for Turnbuckle Trash, because one thing you're doing with that podcast, Dave, that I've learned listening, I had no idea how vibrant the local wrestling community is. And I've learned that from Turnbuckle Trash. This is a growing industry. There's a real community around this. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite things about it at all times, everyone is having fun.
That's true. I wore a Rey Mysterio mask on Halloween, and I was by an elementary school, and here comes this one little boy, and all of a sudden I hear Rey Mysterio. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah.
And that, you know, that's the way it is approached. And I think, you know, they get bad publicity because of what they call kayfabe. And years ago, they wanted you to think it was legit, and they still get injured. They still take a physical toll that I don't think that the common fan really understands. And I'll just throw this in there because I know a local wrestler in Cache Valley, don't know him very, very well, but he broke his orbital bone at one of the matches. And then the next match, he broke his jaw, became dislocated. And that's why they go through all the training. And things do happen in the ring. R-Truth was injured on NXT, injured his leg, maybe his knee. So I tell people, yeah, it might be fake, but it's more like predetermined. But these guys really do hit each other. They might pull their punches, but some of this stuff they do is very dangerous. It's like a stunt show that you'd see on TV that has, you know, multiple takes, but they only do it in one take because it's live. And that's the beauty of professional wrestling and the storytelling they do there.
Oh, the athleticism behind it alone. They don't get enough recognition for that. They train, they practice. I mean, these are athletes, and they deserve to be respected like any other athlete, I think, because and then, like I say, it comes back to it every time. There are few industries, even in the traditional sports world, I guess you might say, there are few that are having so much fun,
right?
As you'll see in the professional wrestling world, just honestly enjoying every minute of it, providing entertainment for the fans. It's an amazing world, and I love that you give it a spotlight, especially the local guys.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And then three of the biggest stars in Hollywood, John Cena, Dave Bautista, and The Rock, all have their roots in professional wrestling too. But, you know, we need to wrap this up a little bit. I wanted to take you and thank you very much for taking time out of your busy day and talking to me. We were talking about 30 minutes before we started this, just catching up with each other. But it has been an interesting conversation, I think, on Radio Guy Reflections, and I thank you very, very much.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave. My pleasure.
And that's Radio Guy Reflections, a podcast about radio and the people behind the microphone. In future podcasts, we'll look at what makes a successful and sometimes a train wreck of a radio show.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
We'll talk with people who started in radio and moved on to success in other fields. Radio Guy Reflections. We'll be back soon with another show about radio and the men and women who produce the radio programs you've loved to listen to. Radio Guy Reflections is a production of Dave's Voice Works.